Welcome, true believers. How you guys doing today? Shunorama, on the road with the Sean Geek Podcast over here on Podbean. You guys familiar with Podbean? Yeah, it seems to be a cool little place for me to hang my hat. If you guys want to have your own podcast, I suggest this place for it. It's affordable. It provides lots of options. It even has some other things on there. Pimping Podbean today. What else am I pimping? Well, today I think it's just going to be a general podcast. I'm going to talk about a couple of things just as they come to mind. One thing I do want to promote, and I'll promote again. I've promoted it before, and I'll promote it after today again. Corey Taves. Sorry, I'm just trying to adjust my microphone here. It's not comfortable. Corey Taves runs a website called Meet the Geeks. What is Meet the Geeks? Well, once upon a time, there were four friends. Four geeks. They were best friends, but they had a difference among them, and the difference was they geeked out four different types of fandom. Why am I pimping this? Well, I'm one of the geeks. Do I write for the webcomic? No, not exactly. Yes, it is a webcomic. Corey Taves is the creator, the writer, the artist. He has collaborated with myself and with Clayton T. Stewart, who you might know from stand-up comedy fame. I've worked with Clayton a bunch of times in the past. The majority of the creative push on it is Corey. And he's the prime writer, but he does draw some inspiration from the other three geeks in the group. And who are these geeks, you might say? Well, one of them is myself. And who is he, a podcast geek? No, he's not a podcast geek. Sean Geek, which the name came from the Meet the Geek strip, really. I am the comic book geek. Corey is the Star Trek geek, and Clayton is the Star Wars geek, and the original geek was Matt. Matt was the Lord of the Rings geek. So we have these four different types of fandom that collide with each other and bond the four heroes of the strip together. The main impetus of the strip is, yes, there's a friendship there, but they are each other's worst enemies. Even though they have each other's backs, they do get in arguments, pitting one fandom against another often, and most often, usually through Corey. He's basically the instigator of things that happen in the strip. In the original discussions when the strip started up, which was several years ago now, we came up with several strip ideas, too many to ever draw, but a lot of it pits Corey's great idea against Clay's ability to go along with it, while myself, I'm usually the straight man in all this, and if you're familiar with old comedy stylings, like Laurel and Hardy or Abbott Costello, there's always the guy that's funny, and then there's the guy that's never funny. I was the guy that was never funny, which is, all right, I'm okay with that. And Corey and Clay always took on the wacky personality amongst the two of them. Matt was always played as the gullible one. So where Sean Geek was gullible in his friendship with these two, Matt was just simply gullible. And that's the way he was played out in the strip. I do want to make a note on this, and Corey and I have spoken about this at length, and we really have spoken about this at length. To be honest, amongst the four of us, I would probably say that Matt is the least gullible of us all, probably the most intelligent of us all, probably the most upstanding of us all, and he makes all of us look bad, to be honest. And his portrayal in the strip was based upon our original original meeting with Matt, who was young, who was pretty young at the time. I mean, this is 10 years ago. 10 years ago? No, longer than 10 years ago when we met Matt. And Matt was a young kid who's really grown up over the years in our eyes and has become better than all of us put together. So his portrayal in the strip, kind of go back and look at it like, oh, we kind of feel bad. Because really, it is not an accurate portrayal. Matt's grown into a wonderful young man. And I look up to Matt. I think he's an amazing human being. So his portrayal in the strip is really a parody of our initial meeting with Matt. Really, that's what it is. And I really, the characters in the strip, they're really parodies of ourselves, probably at our most extreme. Particularly Corey. Corey is not that mean, malicious, or anything. He's like just a sweetheart of a guy. But there you have it. Anyway, so when the strip was originally launched way back when, we did have a push, and I'm not sure how many strips we got through, probably 13 or so, until it kind of petered out or kind of fell apart. Life got in the way, whatever you want to say. I still go back and read these strips, and I still find them incredibly entertaining, incredibly well drawn, and I do want to put kudos out to Clay. The coloring, he did the coloring, he did, you know, he did the inking, he added in graphics in there, so where the pencils might have been, you know, just a rough draft. In some cases, some of the art was really, really clean when it was done, but some of it was not. Clay was always jumped to the task of cleaning this stuff up and making it not only presentable in a final format, but it looked really professional. It looked really good. So as it applies to comic books, I don't think the inker or the colorist get anywhere near enough credit. Sure, it takes somebody to draw that strip, but it really takes the inker and the colorist to bring it alive and breathe life into it. So I do want to give good props to Clay on that. Matt's and my involvement in the strips were very, very limited. Matt had no involvement whatsoever, which sucks because I really would have liked his involvement because he's a really incredibly cool and interesting kind of guy. Myself, my involvement in the strip was just basically kind of pitching ideas or trying my best to throw in a line. I think I was more of a sounding board more than anything. Really, that's really was my role. I'd like to claim more in the strip, but you know, it is what it is. I am proud of anything I can say that I did with this strip. I don't want to say I'm really, really proud of the strip in every way, shape, and form, regardless of who put the work in. Like I said, I still go back and read these strips and go, wow, this is great. You know, something I'm proud to have had any kind of participation in and proud to be included as one of the characters of Meet the Geeks. So that takes us to the present. So Meet the Geeks had a run, whatever, 13 strips. We did try to do a relaunch. I don't know if it was a year, a couple of years later. A giant strip was done up. And we had come up with a whole idea behind the relaunch of the series, why it went away, where the geeks were 2 years later, where they were living, and I won't go into it specifically because, you know, we may still see some life in those concepts or it might get rolled into the latest incarnation. But the idea was the geeks are still friends years later. But I will say, we did talk to a lot of people about the strip when it was in its heyday. and there were plans on having guest stars show up fairly regularly, because where the geeks hung their hat, there would always be random people coming through, and it was going to be a mix of just randomly including people we knew within the geek, within our geek communities, and either having them play themselves or playing a parody of a type of character and having the face of that character, the face of that person on the character. So anyway, so the re-relaunch, Corey has found a home to put the strips, and he's been posting them regularly, as well as he's been fairly pretty prolific, I would say. And he's running four different blogs, and they each have different aspects to them, or topics that they cover. I don't know why, but my personal favorite is Uncle Kebab's Cabin. Kebab is a alternate identity to Corey Taves that he was dubbed by the Klingon. Now, I'm going to get this wrong, and I apologize, but you can check this out on his own blog, but the Klingon Association of Winnipeg or whatever. And he even has a tattoo to prove his membership in the Brotherhood. So that is one of his blogs. He has another blog, which is a Meet the Geeks. He has another blog on there as well, which is, I believe it's a creative process blog. Anyway, I read them all. They're great. Like I said, Corey's one of my best friends, so I really like his insights into things, and I think they're really, really interesting, and I really am trying to organize getting him on this podcast. When he and I talk, it's kind of incredibly interesting. So anyway, check it out. Like I said, there's the Meet the Geeks, and I'm going to post all this in the below here. Where to find all of Brother Kebab, i.e. Corey Taves' work, and the Meet the Geeks ongoing, which he is planning on continuing with the original strips and keep going with it. So there should be semi-regular content available. Fingers crossed. I hope he does what he... I hope he's able to follow through, because, I mean, we all want to see more Meet the Geeks. He's already told me some ideas of the initial new strips that we're going to see, and I'm super stoked, super excited. I like where he's going with it. I think you're all going to be incredibly entertained. And I mean, his artwork is top notch, and he's far more talented than you'll see in the strips. His artwork is great. It's just great stuff, man. So that was one of the items I want to talk about. It took a lot longer than expected, but I really want to pimp the hell out of my brother. So, on to other things. This weekend, this podcast is probably going to pop up a few weeks from now. Or maybe I'll post it this week, we'll see. But this weekend is the big Doctor Strange weekend. The wife and I have a tentative plan on going to see that this weekend. To be honest, I've been very, very excited about Doctor Strange coming out. Probably the most of any Marvel movie in recent years. The last movie I was very excited to see was Ant-Man. And before that, I guess the most anticipated of them all was probably Iron Man 2. Or Captain America 2 were probably the most anticipated. As much as I like the Iron Man franchise, and I think Robert Downey Jr. does a great job, I think it's good that he's elected to put himself into a secondary character position within the Marvel Universe. I don't think we need any more Iron Man movies, at least not right now. Kudos on Downey Jr. to say, hey, let's not do any more. Let's focus on some of the other characters to give them the props. And to be honest, with that thinking in mind, I think that's really what's helped elevate the game for Captain America and its ridiculous, boffo box office it has, considering that Iron Man was the primary character within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It is now Steve Rogers, Captain America, that is really the guy taking it home. And I was very, very excited for Guardians of the Galaxy. Let me just take a step back. But Doctor Strange, I've had a long history with Doctor Strange. I'm a fan of Doctor Strange. I've always been a fan of Doctor Strange. The artwork, the stories, every beat of Doctor Strange has always been really, really cool. And his evolution as a character from just this weird, trippy comic book with Steve Ditko art. I mean, come on, people. Steve Ditko is a brilliant, brilliant genius of an artist who really approached the pencils to... his approach to pencils in comics will never be equaled, will never be duplicated, will never be... No one's gonna do it better than him. He has such an interesting, unique style that no one can copy him. And his work on Doctor Strange really took it to high levels. I really loved his work on Spider-Man. Don't get me wrong, his work on Spider-Man is phenomenal. And really, the history of Spider-Man is built on his back, the artwork that he provided. And the strangeness of his artwork, I think, really, really formed the villains. Most of his great villains that happened under his pencil run. But his work on Doctor Strange really let him burst outside of that bubble and to really just get trippy and awesome and incredibly inventive. And that is why I'm really excited to see him in a movie format. Because, I mean, without Steve Ditko's Doctor Strange, I don't think... here's the thing. Some people have seen the trailers go, oh, it's just like Inception, you know, it's like Marvel's take on Inception. No way, man, not by any stretch of the imagination. Inception is a visual or a movie take on Doctor Strange, on Steve Ditko specifically. There would be no Inception without Steve Ditko, in my humble opinion. Because he invented things. He borrowed from the great artists that were out there, like Monet and those guys, and really took comic book artwork and twisted it and flipped it on its head. And movies have stolen, I'm not going to say stolen, it's more of an homage, but, I mean, Ditko's influence in movies, there's no doubt about it, whether it's a direct influence or an indirect influence. His work is everywhere, and to finally see Doctor Strange, where he originated that artwork, that crazy artwork, and to see it on the screen, I'm super looking forward to it. No, Doctor Strange is not Inception. Inception is Doctor Strange. Let's set that straight. I'm really looking forward to it, and I am a fan of Benedict Cumberbatch. I think he's a quirky, fun actor. He has a lot of the same beats that Tom Hiddleston has, but the difference there, the only difference there is that he has been able to break out a little more successfully than Hiddleston has in Hollywood. And he did The Imitation Game, which was a really good movie. He's done Sherlock. I mean, that, I guess that's kind of his claim to fame. But he's ventured out in other things. I mean, I know Zoolander 2 wasn't a big success, but when he showed up in Zoolander, it was freaking hilarious. He was also in Star Trek 2, which is not... A lot of people didn't like J.J. Abrams' take on Star Trek 2. I don't think I can fault Cumberbatch on that at all. Cumberbatch is brilliant. And his transformation into Dr. Stephen Strange is uncanny and unlike, just visually. I mean, I haven't heard him speak as Doctor Strange yet, really. And so, I mean, it'll be interesting to see the inflections in his voice and his mannerisms. But from a pure visual perspective, he is a better fit than anyone I've seen yet. like Wolverine, for example, Wolverine, I think we're all in agreement that Hugh Jackman made Wolverine his, and he is now what people, when they read X-Men comic books, they see Hugh Jackman in their head when they're, I mean, he's definitely, he took Wolverine and made it his own, and it became the definitive version of that character. Does Hugh Jackman look like Wolverine in the comic books? No, not really, not at all, to be honest. There are some similarities, but I think what he managed to capture was that attitude. Same thing with Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. Is he a definitive Iron Man? He is now, but the basis for Iron Man was not what Robert Downey Jr. brought to the table. But later in comics, Tony Stark became Robert Downey Jr. And it is a good version, don't get me wrong, but for nailing it and look and feel, I think Cumberbatch is the one that's come the closest to anyone, to be honest. So let's see if his attitude matches, if his mannerisms match. I'm just wondering if he's going to be, if he really is going to be that clone of Stephen Strange, or if just visually he's going to be right. But I mean, Cumberbatch is an incredible actor, and I mean, if he can pull it off, I'm really interested to see it. I know I can't see him being exactly the same, and I'm okay with that, just like Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark and Chris Evans as Captain America. But I'm really excited. I'm really excited with this take. And I mean, and it hits a corner of the Marvel Universe I've always loved. And that I've, to be honest, that I've ripped off in some of my writing. Just the visual, the flair, the science of it. That's what I loved about Doctor Strange, is they put a science behind the mystics, the mystical side of the Marvel Universe. And really, Doctor Strange is the anchor to all of that. Without Doctor Strange, I don't think we would have had Man-Thing. I don't think we would have had Howard the Duck. I don't think we would have had, Brother Voodoo or Dr. Druid or any of those magic people. And I really think Doctor Strange helped turn Loki in the comics and made him far more interesting, or the Enchantress. Like, he's really the first magic user in the Marvel Universe. And by that I mean like full-fledged, all out, and really wrote the book for Marvel on what they were going to do. So by the hoary host of August Hoggeth, I'm incredibly excited for this. Those are the two big bits of news. Outside of that, it's NaNoWriMo month. It's November. It's November. It's the month that people generally do their writing for NaNoWriMo. If you're not familiar, I'll send you a link down below. Check it out. I've been in NaNoWriMo, I think, 4 times, maybe 5 times. I've got 3 completed NaNoWriMos under my belt. I really enjoy the process of NaNoWriMo, but with 2 kids, it's really difficult. And I thought I was going to take a run at it this year, but I might put it off and they have a secondary NaNoWriMo they do, I think, around March. I may try to do that. What I'm really looking at doing is, either if I can do it as a written word, I might do it as a spoken word NaNoWriMo. I think that might be the way to go. And I may just not even do it through NaNoWriMo. I might just do it myself. But I've got 3 books that I've done through NaNoWriMo. I've got another one that I started that I'm probably got 15,000 words in on. NaNoWriMo generally runs about 50,000 words. That's how you do it. I get a good chunk already started for a fourth. I also have another NaNoWriMo that I think I completed, but after the date. Maybe I did 4. I'm not really sure. I'd have to go back and look. But basically, these NaNoWriMos that I've done, when you write in that style, you are not editing as you go. You're editing after you're done. And my style tends to be more edit as you go now. But if you really want to push an idea out and you have the germ of an idea and you're not really sure where you want to go with it, NaNoWriMo will flesh that idea out. And you just got to do a lot of cleanup on the end. So what is NaNoWriMo? Well, what NaNoWriMo is, the month of November, they do twice a year, but November is the big original push. You log into the website and you post your words every day to the website. And does a count. And the idea is you're going to push 50,000 words out in the month of November, which is the length of a novella. And from that basis, you will have your novel. There is another month where you are spending time, blocks of time, to editing that work. There's also other forms of NaNoWriMo that occur throughout the year. There's a songwriting. There is a drawing, there is a script writing, different formats that I'm actually very interested in trying. I can't remember how the songwriting works. Maybe it's writing a song a day or a song a week. I'm not really sure how that process works, but I do like the format of, you know, you're under pressure to perform and you perform. And it's not about quality, it's about quantity. And then once you're done, you can take a look at that quantity you've produced and try to shape it into some quality, right? So anyway, that's what NaNoWriMo is. So if you want to be part of it, you want to do something with it, again, I will post the link on the bottom, check it out. I've done it before, it's a great exercise. If you've always wanted to write that book and you've never done it, you don't know where to get started. Is it the best way to do it? No, it's not the best way. There's several ways to get stuff done. But what I will say is if you've never gotten off your butt, you've always wanted to do it, and you've never gotten off your butt to successfully do it, that's the way to do it. It'll force that first novel out. Will it be good? It's not about being good. It's about getting the work done and putting the work in. And it really sets up a schedule for yourself to really, really push this through and get it done. So, highly recommend it, especially for first-time writers that have never put anything out and you want to get it done, do it. It's rewarding. You'll feel good once you're done. And if you do it a few times like I've done, you actually will develop a technique and a cadence that will allow you to write without NaNoWriMo. But anyway, I'm going to sign off here. I've arrived at my destination, and as the podcast rules are, I talk while I'm driving and I stop when I'm stopped. So we'll check you out on the flip side. Peace, love, and hugs, and we'll talk to you soon.